Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters Radio Show number 329 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my Talk Franklin conversation with Town Administrator Jamie Helen and Communications Specialist Anne Marie Tracy. We had our conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. During our session, we talk about the reopening status briefly. We talk about the election preparation, particularly for the primary. And then to recap and set up some of the other topics, we talk about the stormwater, next meeting September 9th. Think Blue Franklin has been extended through August 23rd. EDC committee has a meeting coming up August 20th. And listening sessions have been scheduled through the fall. The MEC grant received a grant to further expand their regionalization. Senior Center office hours are in the morning on August 20th. And then Jamie Helen also closes out with Counselor Earl leaving for law school. The recording runs just over an hour, so let's listen to my conversation with Jamie and Anne-Marie. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM on the internet anywhere, or 102.9 on the local area Franklin dial. Another session of Talk Franklin with our town administrator, Jamie Helen, and a marketing communications specialist, Anne-Marie Tracy. Good afternoon, folks, and welcome.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good afternoon, Steve.
Happy it's Friday.
Yes.
And the heat, the humidity at least, has kind of disappeared a little bit, or more of it's going, so that's even better.
Yeah, hopefully it'll go down a little bit more.
Yes, definitely. Probably since it's been a bit since we talked, a little bit on the reopening, where we are, and there's not a whole lot going in that space in terms of new news.
There's not a lot of new news. I think if I were to try to summarize it, I'd say we entered phase three at the beginning of June. Here we are in the middle of August. We're a solid 10 weeks into phase three. Seemed to be a short mini spike. Of cases across Massachusetts, but I think the good news is in the last week here, it's settled back down into where the plateau was in June and July of 200 to 300 cases a day in that ballpark range, and where it was hitting there for a couple weeks, 4 or 5 days a week, it was getting up into almost 500 cases a day. I think that overall, what people have to think of here is the good news is. We have been in phase three for 10 weeks. Most other states have not had this success. And given the fact that we're doing this during summer, when everyone is interacting in terms of barbecues and parties and to see their family for the first time in 4 months and visiting nursing homes and playing basketball and, just being out and about at restaurants, the fact that we've been able to really, really contain this is something that's really important. And I think moving forward, this is all, wearing masks all the time stinks. I don't want this to be the future of my life. But obviously it's a factual, it's just a fact. That they prevent transmission of this, and that in the compliance with the mask orders, as well as the quarantine travel orders, while frustrating, the truth of the matter is these are the reasons why we're in the position we're in the middle of August, where we're still able to stay open. We haven't really scaled back in an operation. And I think that if the public can really keep this going for a few more months, as we get into cooler months, you're going to see people retreat inside anyways more often, maybe stay home a little bit more often, see where we're at in the country and continue to buckle down as we head into winter. And obviously when we get around the holidays, the hope is that we have a vaccine, there's a prospect for a vaccine. And I hope that will give people confidence that, we didn't have to scale back to a phase two or phase one, like many, pretty much, the vast majority of the rest of the country have to do. Our town offices and buildings and services are wide open. They have been during this whole thing. We are still saying to people they should be doing their business through the drive-through window at the municipal building, the online services that we have at the library, the senior center. Every department has a lot of what they normally do going on. They may be doing it a little differently. But if there's anyone out there listening, looking for checking out books, if they're looking to pay bills, if they're looking to bring back their ballots, which Anne-Marie will talk about in a little bit, just keep coming to the town hall. There's a way to do business. Pick up the phone, call the building commissioner if you're a contractor. They're meeting with people outside. We set up picnic tables. We've really gone out of our way to make sure that the service delivery in the town is not skipped a beat while really keeping people safe. And, I think that thus far, we've done an incredible job. And I expect right now for a lot of the same of what we have to continue on into the near future. The last thing I'll mention about reopening before I know Anne-Marie might make a couple comments about the school reopening plan is one of the other big things that maybe folks who are listening to the podcast may not know is we have actually been having some town council and school committee meetings in the municipal building. Yep. I give a lot of credit to Franklin TV. I don't think Pete slept in 4 weeks, but he's delivered the goods as always, where we have a whole new monitoring system, and Steve obviously been a part of that too. But, I think what you're seeing is these are techniques, not only what we're likely to have for the future for the planning board, ZBA, and conservation as September and October, November hit. This is probably the way it's going to be for a while in the future anyway. Participation's been higher. Access has been easier. People have more choice in how to participate with the meeting. And I think as some of the tough decisions that are going to have to be made in the future enter our sphere come in the winter or next spring, I think that this is all important investments that we've made to try to enhance the customer service that we do. So, that's a bit of an update from the municipal side of things. Anne-Marie, I know the superintendent came out with a reopening plan this week, and I know you've got a website. You want to talk about a little bit of that?
Yes. So obviously, I think most people are aware of the reopening plan that was approved by the school committee. And we have been updating the reopening website, as well as all of our individual school websites for easy access. So if people are looking for information on the reopening plan, if you just go to the school district site, franklinps.net, there's a red bar there. If you click on it, it will take you right to the reopening school site, where we've tried to categorize the information in ways to, easy chunks to try to find what you're looking for. But you can also find the full reopening plan on the site too, on the bulletin item. We added that today too. So everything that you're looking for is available online. We have our reopening at franklinps.net email address. So if you can't find something that you want to know the answer to, you can certainly send an email there. Just wanted to make people aware of where to find what they're looking for, because it is all out there. And then also talking, just to backtrack a little bit into the municipal, the viewpoint system on our website has been such an incredible tool during this pandemic and always. And I just wanted to make sure people knew that the most recent addition to our viewpoint site, the online permitting, is the Board of Health. So the Board of Health has moved applications for licenses, all of that, all of those, permitting onto the viewpoint site. So viewpoint is just the name for our online system, which can be found on the website by clicking on the payments and permits form button. So just so you know, it's being constantly expanded upon. It was one of the, one of the pieces of government that was still not on there, and now it is. So just in case people are looking, there's an easy way to find that information.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've used it for a number of things. The online bill pay.
It's great.
So much permit. I do need to renew my Beaver Street permit parking thing, not parking thing, but recycle.
Yep.
Tag. Yep. Because the prior one extended through July sometime, but now it's in August. So I need to renew it. I haven't had the opportunity to actually bring something yet, but I'm sure that'll come up. So I want to have a fresh tag for that. Because that has to be done beforehand anyway. So
I have found it so easy to use. I'm the person who pays the bills in my household, and I've always just used my online banking. But for all of the town bills, I think going onto the system is even easier. You get an immediate receipt, you get a PDF of it. It's just such a quick turnaround. Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, the funds being, you know, cashed and not, you know, waiting for the time period, doing it the other way. It's just really great. And it has completely changed the way I pay all of my municipal bills. I go online to do them on the town website now, which is different than I used to do. And I have found it much more efficient, actually.
Just to note, I've gotten some inquiries about this recently. That was a great pitch, by the way, Emery. We've been able to in the last 5 years, which actually was something we did, which really set ourselves up for success for the pandemic.
Sure.
Was to have these systems well in place. They weren't perfect, but we've been working on them quite a bit behind the scenes. We've basically gotten all customer service online services into two different areas, right? We used to have, like, each department would have almost their own software program.
Right.
Or they would have things that, weren't... things where you're printing out receipts and you're getting them via email.
Yep.
And so really for the public to know, there is no system out there or software that exists. We constantly demo things as a team. There's no one-stop shop. If there was, we would do it.
Mm-hmm.
We are still trying to work through the Apple Pay and Square and various other forms of payment. And for obvious, I can sit there and I'm not going to talk about it for hours.
No.
But, you know, there just are issues for the companies that traditionally work with municipalities. Some of that logjam is breaking up. But we feel successful that we've been able to get it to just Unibank and Viewpoint, where Unibank is basically property taxes and property-related billing. And then Viewpoint's really more permits, right,
mm-hmm.
and services. So... optional. And so, between two systems where it used to be eight, you feel a pretty big victory. And, we're not able to, at this point, all get it under one roof. Obviously, hopefully in the future, there's an opportunity to do that. But, unfortunately, folks have got to probably put in a couple different logins.
Yeah. Well, but I recall having worked with Jim Dacey. So this is going back to the early days of the Unipay rather. To get that quote tested and working, et cetera. So yeah, it's come a long ways and it's going to continue to get enhanced, and it's certainly a secure and now safe remote way of continuing to do business. Picking up on your earlier point about the meetings in the town chambers. Yeah. I think the power outage that some people experienced on that Friday before the first one, certainly really threw a big wrinkle into, if not a monkey wrench into, Pete and TV's planning for that, because there was a whole bunch of equipment that they've still spent some time reconfiguring, if not replacing outright because of the power outage. But yeah, to your point, we at least now have multiple ways to enable participation, which even on the school committee meeting, if everybody had wanted to be in the chambers for the school committee meeting, had it been there, they all couldn't have fit, because the chambers really has only 75 in a pre-corona day. Certainly less. And there were, I don't know what the max number was, but there was certainly over 320 for most of the meeting on Tuesday night. And that was just via the Zoom. There was another dozen or so via the live stream, as well as however many people were via cable and Verizon and Comcast. So that's certainly broadening the access. So that's all a good note. We definitely want to keep that going forward.
And, Steve, because I know you read it. In my budget narrative, I have a sentence in there to the extent, if not paraphrase, where I said, citizen engagement is an absolute must this year.
Yeah.
But this community is going to be able to tackle the challenges that financially are going to be before us. Forget FY21 in some ways. FY22 and 23 are going to be exponentially worse.
Correct.
They are challenging. That's when things usually hit with economic recessions. It's usually a year or two, three out mm-hmm. from where the point of incident is. And even if it's people at home with their earbuds in, certainly I've heard a few jokes flying around of people on treadmills, people cooking, folks sitting on the couch watching TV, but someone's paying attention, you know, everybody's doing their thing, but it still keeps people in the loop. And you know, they hear some information that will hopefully make them, participate and more educated on these issues as we go down the line. And at least understand where, the school committee and the superintendent, the council and the town administrator stand on a lot of this stuff and how it goes, you know, fits together over the course of the year. So, you know, make some of the meetings a little longer. I think that's obviously a challenge. There are, you know, I think, you know, but I think the fact that that many people are able to tune in. We didn't have a lot of people on this week's council meeting, Steve, but the meeting before we did, many more than we normally have. Yeah. And I expect those numbers to continue to go up as some of the decisions get more important.
Yeah, and I think the one of the key pieces, citizen engagement is going to be when it matters to me, right? And clearly, with all due respect, the town council, while it had some important things, really didn't have kind of the broad one that the prior meeting had. And certainly when we get into the budget, those should bring out more and more people. So there will be variation, but at least you won't have people, you know, not able to participate. That's We've made it that much more available for them to do so.
And have more choice. Absolutely.
Correct. You know, absolutely.
Especially because people probably aren't going to be coming back in the building for meetings. You know, soon. You
for
know,
some time, absolutely.
The school committee just got their first taste of it, you know, having that meeting in person. The planning board was obviously in the building last week for an appointment to an associate seat that was vacant since the election.
Yep.
I think they, you know, picked up on it being in for the first time. Like, you can't have a public hearing, you know, in a, it just can't happen. There's just not enough room.
No.
You know, and right now the training room for any spillover is being taken over and utilized for the town clerk. So, you know, there's a lot of competing demand. 6 feet, you know, outside isn't too bad, but 6 feet inside is pretty tight.
Yes. Yeah. Having done that, and there'll be more on the meetings, et cetera, election process, that's kind of the next big piece. You've got a bunch of stuff coming, working with the town clerks, and certainly I'll be also scheduling time with them to do an audio piece in prep for the primary. And then November as well.
Yeah, so obviously elections have a lot of options this year as well. So the state primary is scheduled for Tuesday, September 1st, and in-person voting will be available from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. at Franklin High School. So that looks the same. Obviously, people at in-person voting, if you heard the town clerk discussing this at the town council meeting, you know, it's going to look a little different and it'll feel a little bit different, but it is available. And that information is all posted on our website and on all of our social media.
Change to that, though, while it's at the high school, which is normal, it's starting at 7 instead of 6.
It is. There's an hour. It is starting an hour later. You're absolutely right. This year, it's just a little bit shorter. And then early voting is available for a week. And starting on Saturday, August 22nd, and running straight through from that Saturday to the following Friday on August 28th. And all the hours are also posted again on our website and our social media. There are hours on Saturday and Sunday. So hopefully anybody who would like to take advantage of early voting can find a time that might work for them. And those are all happening at Franklin High School as well.
Yeah, and we'll be sharing that because clearly while the hours for Saturday and Sunday, the 23rd and 24th, once we get into the Labor Day weekend prior to the primary, there's nothing on that weekend.
Exactly.
With all due respect, I mean, we have plenty of time to early vote. Go spend a weekend.
And it's Labor Day weekend. Just to go along with that. I mean, that's the whole point of it, right?
Yeah.
And then there's obviously the mail, the vote by mail forms that have gone out. There's a lot of ways to, you know, put those back, you know, send them back in. You could drop them off at town hall, but we encourage people to, in the white box, you know, you can mail them back, you can send them back via email or fax, but we encourage people to get those back as soon as possible, just to get the process really, you know, moving along. They're technically due the 26th, but the earlier the better if you do want to vote by mail, get that paper back.
It's going to be a huge push this weekend from Secretary Galvin. I think many people have already seen some of the ads. If you have a ballot at home, send it in. If you have a ballot at home and you know who you're going to vote for, send it in. If you know you're not going to change your mind, get it in. Right. The earlier you can get it in, the better. Just when it comes in the mail, if you already know who you're going to vote for, just do it. If you obviously want to see another debate or there's, you know, additional information you're looking for the candidates, obviously don't send it in. Mm-hmm. There are those deadlines, right? But presumably people, I will give a quick update. I did talk to the clerk, temp clerk, this morning. And I bet you by about now they have about 6,000 ballots, mail-in ballots, out the door. That have come in for requests quite a bit. It's a primary, by the way. The clerk's office will be working through the weekend to make sure that every mail-in request that has come to them is going to be in the mail by Monday.
Yep.
And then there's obviously a few more days of mail-in requests that can happen. And you know, you're going to have to, folks are going to be encouraged to really have some patience. If you sent in the mail-in, you know, don't go 2 days later to stand in line for early voting. You can if you want to get it out of the way, but, you know, really we want a lot of citizens to think about how they want to vote. All of the choice and options are available. You know, everybody has the right to make their own decision. We're obviously asking people to really not try to duplicate efforts because there's a lot of additional rules in the statute this year that the clerk's office has to follow. And so obviously their time is valuable, and if people could just do the best thing they can, that would be wonderful. And then of course the early voting, you know, is going to be at the high school this year for both the primary and the general election, as Emily mentioned, which is really critical for safety, have as many stations as possible. And as the town clerk outlined at the council meeting this week, going to have a whole safety protocol in there, you know, and whatnot. So I know there's been a little talk I've heard about it outside of Franklin Inn, you know, even a little bit in. You know, people obviously, you know, can get worried about their ballot. You know, I sent them the mail. Did it get there? I believe there is a website to track some of that stuff. All of it's barcoded. And Steve's going to put it up on the screen after when I now I'm talking. I don't want to get the, you know, URL wrong.
No.
But you can track your ballot because they are all barcoded. People really have to have faith in the great office that we have with Teresa, Nancy, and Susan, and all the poll workers. We were in there the other day. They took over the training room. They got an assembly line going. It's a well-oiled machine. And so people really should have the utmost faith that their ballot's going to get back to them and whatnot. Some of this stuff being discussed about the U.S. Postal Service, you know, on a more global nature, I will say that I really believe deep down inside, regardless of whatever happens on the news, these are dedicated people that are going to do what it takes to get the job done. These are folks that have withstood Amazon in the last 5 years and all the online services, which has been great for business for them. But, you know, I think that these are dedicated professionals that, you know, really don't want to be in the middle of this politics discussion. And I think that, you know, people really need to believe in our Postal Service's excellent troops and that they're going to get the job done. So people should feel as if they want a lot of certainty. The mail-in is an option, no lines. I actually just did it last night. I put in my mail-in ballot and I got it 3 days later. And my wife and I and family just filled them out right there, stuck them back in the envelope, and she already dropped them off at the clerk's office today. So we do have a drive-through. People can drop it off in the white box.
Correct.
And if they want to say hi to somebody, they can just go through the municipal building drive-through, say hi to Patty or Tammy, and drop it off with them.
Sure.
You know, these are folks that, you know, love to say hi to people. Just go put it in the drive-through window. It's okay. Yep. You know, we'll take it any way we can get it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
My weekly PSA, Steve.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we'll probably take that package out and put it as a PSA somewhere.
And for God's sakes, vote. Please. Yes. Everybody who's listening, I'm begging you. Just vote. You know, really. We're at home. We need to get out. We need to do something. What a great way to use our time. There's nothing more important. So just go out and vote.
Absolutely. Yep. And there'll be more to come on that for sure, especially as we get closer into the early election voting period and then into the primary and the aftermath and then in the lead up to November as well. So I think that covers the election piece. More to come. Since last time, though, at least, there was a couple of things that at least, if you will, are kind of newsworthy to make sure people didn't miss if they did catch something or didn't catch it along the way. Stormwater being one.
Really quickly on stormwater, looking forward, the Stormwater Ad Hoc Committee got back together. Number one, for any listener, go to franklinma.gov, right on the homepage, follow down to the bottom, a great website on stormwater. There's everything there to put you to sleep on Sunday night if you're having a hard time. But the truth is, the big piece is this is going to cost money.
Right.
And I hope now that I've caught your attention, for any listener, we have a meeting on September 9th. At 6:30, I'll be the Stormwater Ad Hoc Committee again. It'll be offered on Zoom. We'll probably do it like we've been doing in the chamber. And we're going to put forth a proposal to the Ad Hoc Committee of what our revised stormwater program might be based on COVID. The truth and the reality is that we have to do something to appease federal law. We've already done every lawsuit we could do. But the other reality is this is a really difficult and challenging fiscal time for everybody. And we've got to look at this as an investment in your own infrastructure in your community. And this is also something that's going to take the rest of my career to implement. Yeah. Truthfully, it's going to take 20, 25 years, right? So, and just in case your listeners on the radio don't know how old I am, Steve, you know, I wanted to say 2020. So, you know, it's something people need to engage in. There's no likelihood of a fee coming anytime this year.
That's the good news.
Highly unlikely. It's highly, highly unlikely for good reason. But we do need to do something. And I think what we heard at the last meeting is going to set us up for the next few, which is, what's the number per person?
Right.
And so we are working on getting the property level information out. We're working with the consultant right now to try to come up with a revised budget program for FY22, a year and a half away.
Sure.
And to look at what's the number. Is it $10 average per household? Is it $20 average per household? Yep. Is it 25? Is it multiple increases in 2023, 24, what's the slow growth out of this? And so that we don't, you know, we don't hit people hard. Like I'm saying, I'm telling you on the radio here, you know, if it's $20 average per household or something, what does that add up to? What can we get done?
And
the EPA is not going to have any mercy on this. It is what it is.
And Maria, I think with helping with the awareness piece, the Think Blue Franklin, that's being extended a little bit?
It is. So the Think Blue Franklin contest is sponsored by Think Blue Massachusetts, which is a nonprofit in the state that helps try to share just knowledge, information, awareness on stormwater. We're one of the chosen pilot towns to run this program. And it's super easy. It's a fun kind of hashtag contest on all three of our social media platforms. So Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you look on any of those, you can find information about it. It's simply sharing a photo related to stormwater. So there's a number of different categories. There are storm drains, smart lawn care, scoop the poop, which is, you know, always a favorite. And blanking on the last, walking in the rain, which we haven't walking had a lot rain. Of rain. We haven't had a lot of rain to walk in lately. So that's going to be
the forecast is not so good even for next week.
So that's a tough category, but the Think Blue Massachusetts is sponsoring this contest with $2,000 Amazon gift cards to the winner. So if you take a picture, tag us, on any of them, you don't have to do all three, whatever your favorite social media is, and you know, use the hashtag ThinkBlueFranklin and you'll be entered to win. Once we see that, I send out an official entry form where people can fill it in. And we're going to be extending it for one full week. So we're going to be looking to end it now on August 23rd instead of the 16th. So it'll be another week. Maybe we'll get some rain for the walking in the rain category. But it's a great way to help educate our community about stormwater and maybe, you know, win something in the process.
Nothing like a little monetary incentive.
Oh, definitely. And we've gotten some really great entries. I've actually gotten to see a couple people's dogs, which is always fun. So it's fun to see what people are posting. I've gotten some rain barrels. I've gotten a lot of storm drains. So I appreciate everybody who has participated so far. And we're looking for, you know, for more.
Yeah, I'll have to go dig into my photo archive.
Yeah.
Especially for some walking in the rain photos, because I was looking forward to at least doing that, and it doesn't look like it's going to be raining right away. So.
No, not anytime soon.
No, unfortunately.
No, and this I noticed there was a separate piece about the state elevating our route status.
Anne-Marie's bolting, Steve. I can see she's waving, and she's like, she's trying to be polite the way she is at the moment.
So thank you all very much. I'm sure I'll talk to you soon. Yep. Bye.
Take care. Yeah, so I think there was a state agency, and it escapes me at the moment, elevated our drought risk by one to the next level.
It's the Executive Office of Environmental Affairs, and I know this because, as fate would have it, that was my first job in my career. And
oh.
The first thing I was a part of was the Drought Management Task Force, which is still in existence.
Yes.
And now they're meeting, and they are looking at raising it to level two. Gonna have to see what Mother Nature throws at us. I mean, I think Mother Nature's been throwing quite a bit at us this year.
Yeah, it's been a challenging year.
And then the other meeting coming up is the EDC meeting on August 20th, Steve.
Correct.
I believe it's going to be 6 or 6:30. It'll be posted soon.
I think it's out there at 6.
At 6 o'clock.
Yep.
I do want to note one thing that'll be likely released that night is a listening tour for the EDC throughout the fall and the winter. We're going to have some pre-planned dates, a calendar.
Okay, that was alluded to as coming. Okay, so that'll be ready for that.
Yep, this is going to be the big thing on Thursday, will be the dates, times, and sectors. We're going to continue to hold off to put out a full plan because we really want to get these dates on folks' calendars. The first one, by the way, is going to be on September 30th, and it's going to focus on downtown, the crossing, and the Franklin Cultural District. So, a little teaser, a little primer.
Sure.
We're going to do one for the restaurant and hospitality and hotel industry. We're going to do one relative to the Franklin Industrial Parks and manufacturing. And we're going to do one relative to real estate and construction and building industries. And we're going to do one on a fifth sector that is just completely drawing a blank right now. But you know, we've got a handful of them that are going to be throughout each month over the fall and the winter. And you know, I think as I said earlier, as we kind of get to this point where we've hopefully plateaued and we stay in phase three, you know, we get to this winter and next spring, I think that's going to be the deciding factor for a lot of businesses in town and in terms of what the future looks like. I believe an opportune time to start being out there and try to listen to folks about what their ideas are, what their struggles might be, what their fortunes might be. Some businesses are doing well right now. You know, what kind of relationships and partnerships or minor, large actions can any of us do, as well as our Beacon Hill representatives, as we kind of enter into COVID in the fall and winter, which is going to certainly change everything. So, you know, we're looking forward to it. We think it's going to be a good event for a good series of events for everybody. And hopefully people can pay attention to the meeting on August 20th at 6 o'clock with the EDC to release some of those dates and talk about the economic development study a little bit more.
Yeah. And I certainly will be coordinating to, in advance of, now that we know the listening sessions are coming, something kind of chunking out from the report, which is not as overwhelming as the
stormwater report. It's 50 something pages as opposed to what, 500 pounds for the stormwater page.
Yeah, exactly. it's like they always show you in Congress, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Even the PDF, I've started reading the PDF, but that's just, yeah, it's sleep reading for sure. But back to the important market study, chunking it out, because there is a whole bunch of info. And granted, it needs to be taken somewhat in context because it was done pre-corona. But there still are valid pieces of info that we can use and we will need to use, obviously adjusted as required. But that's where the listening sessions should, you know, for retail, hotel, you know, for a restaurant, et cetera. We can start getting into more details in those discussions than determine the master plan, so to speak.
So we did. So you just nailed it, because I went and took a look at it while you were talking, because I felt bad I didn't remember the fifth one. The fifth one is retail and personal service. So we're doing two. So we want to hear restaurants, hospitality, and hotels is one.
Right.
And we're doing retail separately, because the Franklin demo with retail, it's a pretty wide spectrum when you talk about
is.
Retail and personal service, right? So we're doing another night on that. And then, like I said, the other night on industrial parks and manufacturing, and another night on real estate. You know, it should be fun, should be informative. As we found out at last week's EDC meeting, there's good ideas from public discussion. There's a great discussion on a placemat, brochures, a bunch of stuff. So we're gonna implement some of those. We're looking forward to it. And August 20th at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, and a slight last plug to close this off, but for the people who complain on the other social media places, this is the one place akin from the pure master plan where we can truly present our ideas and thoughts and wishes for the retail marketplace that we have here in Franklin. And oh, by the way, if we want to change it, now's the time.
Yeah.
Right, so we'll get the keyboard warriors away from the keyboards and at least, you know, into whether it's a Zoom meeting or whatever to make something happen.
Keyboard warriors probably aren't going to go away.
No.
But, you know, but I agree with you in the sense that, you know, what and some of the study brought this out, right? A couple of the things that stuck out to me, you know, the demographics in Franklin, it's a very young community.
Yes.
It's in the same category as the cities that all the young kids want to go, you know, live in, right? Some of the little hands-on stuff, right? So, you know, we're a very young town in a way, certainly younger by demographics numbers from around the surrounding area.
Mm-hmm.
That's an advantage. That means there's income here that is right to spend, you know, again, depending on COVID, obviously, but, you know, I thought that there was a lot. It was interesting how the restaurant industry wasn't quite as diverse, maybe, as other communities.
Yes.
I'm kind of editorializing a little bit and paraphrasing, but, you know, there was clear distinction between, and I think that reflects, you know, the fact that there's a very strong lunch crowd in Franklin. There's a lot of contractors that drive through.
Sure.
There's a lot of lunch places to go. But yet on the other hand, I think to myself, when I look at downtown center, I think you have a whole variety of options when Acapulco's is there, it's just down the street, but you know, you have a variety of different, you know, options to go to in terms of diversity, but the study also reflected, you know, there was a lot of money leaving Franklin to go eat out elsewhere. And I think that that's where you're getting into the stuff that we've been working on for years with the breweries and distilleries.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot more healthier food options. There's money in Franklin to spend. How do we get those businesses to come here? Do we have to change things? You know, is there something we need to do? And it'll be a long process. This is not a Google search. We're not going to Google it and get an answer and go do it. It's going to take a widespread community conversation, much like the town budget. And, you know, now is, like you said, it's really the perfect time to engage in this type of stuff for the people out there that are interested in these types of issues.
Yeah, and I was going to mention that point, and I will reemphasize it, because in the details, there are some clear demographics, dollars by category, where clearly the money is leaving Franklin to be spent elsewhere. And, oh, okay, so thereby, if we did something in Franklin, then those dollars would stay here. Now,
that's right.
There may be some opportunities for people to do that, whether it's entrepreneur or whatever. there may be in some cases we can't do that, but exactly. The numbers are at least there. So now we can talk about it and see if we can make something happen.
And it wasn't to reflect in the report either that somehow people don't come to Franklin to eat out either. This isn't something to say we don't have good choice or options. It's just saying that in a community of our size, there's lost opportunity that you haven't captured yet.
Right.
It's not as if what you have is bad, you know, and slap you on the wrist.
No.
It's really about saying, how can you be better to accommodate what's in your community right now? And maybe you're missing something that I think it put it more of a quantitative aspect
quantitative.
To something yes. that we already qualitatively kind of knew.
Right.
Based on what we've seen at the Harvest Festival, based on what we've seen at other events, mm-hmm. based on the popularity of Art Week, is that there has been this untapped well in town of resources that are going other places further away to have a different experience. And that's something that we need to do. And I think that also stems to the retail issue. Which will be a fascinating discussion in and of itself later on in the fall too, is there was a lot of money leaving Franklin to go elsewhere. Some of that impact is obviously Gillette Stadium or the mall. But I think in this point, what you just said, now's the time where
right.
do people want to go to malls in the same capacity that they used to? Are they looking for more local niche businesses to feel like they're going to be safer, that they have a more personal mm-hmm. connection? These are all big questions and fun ones
to
answer. And so, again, if anybody's out there listening and this is your time to get involved in these issues, it'll be a lot of fun over the coming year.
Yeah, because purely from a business, small, large, whatever perspective, right. this is one place. And again, maybe with the caveats around the numbers, et cetera, but you can work with that. One place that shows the dollars that are either coming into Franklin or the dollars that are leaving Franklin, you've got by market segment.
Absolutely.
The numbers right there. So you don't have to go to the census data or the, you know, wherever else you would get that kind of info. It's yeah. already in one place for you. So yeah, more to come on that.
I'm really pumped up about it. I'm really looking forward to these listening sessions I'm just really looking forward to them. I'm looking to get back out there a little bit too. And I think as we've had these 4 or 5 months, a lot of people have been waiting for what's next. And this might be a really good opportunity to bring up some great ideas to the already long list of great ideas right. in the report and that have come from these meetings. So it'll be a lot of fun and we'll look forward to it.
Agreed. And it just occurred to me one other piece kind of that happened and kind of, you did spend some time on it in the budget hearings, but also came up in the town council meeting. So for mm-hmm. those who haven't, the MEC grant,
wow,
it's a major item.
And it is a major item. I'm glad you pointed it out.
But it's an item that I think we can spend a couple minutes at least. It sure. not only changes and recognizes the regionalization of the dispatch, right, mm-hmm. but then has a funding impact. And also allows us to, you know, prepare for that new future when we do have to start paying for it, right? So it's a great thing, but we also have to prepare for it. So
I hope that it's been hard to find a line to capture people's attention on this, right? The Regional Dispatch Center is a dispatch center that has been the towns of Norfolk, Plainville, Wrentham, Franklin, have been working on for several years to regionalize regional dispatch center.
Yep.
And basically, we just started and opened the building a year ago in May 2019.
Yep.
And now what we've done is we're trying to regionalize regional dispatch.
Yeah.
So we're adding the towns of Mendon and Millville, which made us qualified for an additional grant program, allowed us to have a full year's assessment paid for. The upcoming FY21 assessment for the MEC dispatch center was about $900,000. That $900,000 will now be zero for the town. And so what we've chosen to do was use half of those savings to help prevent further cuts and reductions to the staff and programs for the municipal side.
Yeah, in the operation out of the whole budget.
Right. And then the additional 50% of the savings we put into a dedicated stabilization account to pay for the year eventually that we're going to have to pay a full assessment, so we don't have to take that full amount and plug it into the budget and find a way to do it.
Right.
And so what we do anticipate is a four-year grant, and they'll pay the assessment for 100% this year, FY22, 50% of that assessment in 24, and 25% of that assessment in FY25.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we hope is over the next 4 years, we can save up enough money from those savings to be able to have a full year's assessment down the road when it all comes back and hits us.
Correct.
We're going to have to phase that money back into the reality of our budget. But given what we're dealing with now, if we were in this situation, we'd be saving a lot more money. We wouldn't have to plan for the future necessarily, but given the uncertainty of the next several years, putting that money away in that bank is really critical. And it's exactly like we're doing with OPEB. You know, it's exactly what we do with retiree health benefits.
Mm-hmm.
In that OPEB liability, we have a liability and we're trying to set that off on the side and make sure we're doing the right thing to protect that liability for the community. So it is a big announcement. I do appreciate you bringing it up. I did call Heather McCarron, was interested in it, the Country Gazette, so Heather's listening to the story on June. But it is a big deal, and I appreciate that, Steve. Adding Mendon and Millville in January of 2021.
Right.
I'm very excited to have them. And the facility, by the way, when Mr. Nutting was here, was built to do this.
Correct.
It was built to add additional communities in.
Yep.
That were smaller, that didn't have to drive up our costs because we already had capacity in our dispatchers.
Yep.
And physically in the space, but would helpfully reduce the assessments over time.
Yep.
And I wouldn't be surprised, Steve, is if 2 or 3 years from now, after this grant round's done, I wouldn't be surprised if the towns had continued discussions with other communities.
Mm-hmm. And, sure.
You know, the state of California has something like, four. I was going to say a half a dozen dispatch centers for 48 million people.
Yep.
The state of Massachusetts has like 250 or 300 dispatch centers for 6 million people.
Yep.
There's definitely clearly efficiencies here, but you know they do take time from an equipment perspective to work out, and it is public safety, so you don't get a day, you don't get a month off. It's got to be seamless, and it's got to be well prepared. So those are the things we do every year, and because you pay attention, Steve. But for folks that don't, and you tune into the council meetings or the school committee meetings, and you're doing your treadmill. Or washing dishes, these are the things you're going to hear about every 2 weeks. And I hope that it builds some level of confidence in the taxpayer that our staff is relentlessly on top of ways to try to do these things and make very difficult choices to move forward to try to make sure that the tax impact in this town is maintained and stable. Mm-hmm. We don't have these big ebbs and flows. So
yeah,
I do appreciate that, Steve. That was another big announcement this week.
Yeah, no, I wanted to mention it for two reasons. One, we certainly have a little bit of time to do that. But I think, at least from my perspective, it was even 10 years ago, I think, when the long-range planning committee at that time was talking about, trying to regionalize. And the government doesn't necessarily allow for some of the things like that to happen. So it took a long time to get to the deal we did have to start it. And now it's expanding, so there may be more and more to have coming like this. And Brutus has talked of the DPW and trying to handle the storm drain situation with the private entity along Dean. And there's still some legalities where things are complicated there. Mm-hmm. Long term, clearly, we want to go there. The government needs to change in order to enable that. Regionalization is a good thing to happen. And then the other point clearly is, that's fiscal management in its fiduciary management purely, right? Because you are preparing for the eventuality. We're going to have to pay that again, right?
So people say all the time, and whether I agree with it or not is not the case, but people tell you all the time they want to see government being run a little bit more like business.
Mm-hmm.
And what I always interpret that as somewhat is it's about bottom line, it's about return on investment, and a whole series of other theoretical or principled business points that, whole nother show, but this is what business does, you know, and they look at their bottom line, they look at the numbers, they look at the productivity, they look at the staffing, they look at the benefits cost, and they look at and respect the rate payer, in this case, or whatever else it is in the customer, somewhere. Yeah. You know, I don't say it to toot all of our horn, right? I say it because it's what's happening.
Yes.
And it is what's happening, and this is how we do things here. And so, you know, it's something that is going to continue to be modified and will be worked on. It won't be perfect. There will be challenges. In the midst of all this other COVID stuff and every other decision we have to make, sure, it would have been easy to just stay the same, right? It would have been easy to just sit, you know what, we're not going to do it. We know what the number is. We have certainty. It's there. But that's not what we do. And that's not what Jen in Plainville or Kevin in Rentham or Blythe in Norfolk do. And so those are their respective town managers. So you know, we've been able to work together great as a board. And those are the things that people go in the budget documents too. If you're looking for some sleep on a Sunday.
Absolutely.
Look at our budget website. It's all right there.
Yeah. And that'll raise some questions from time to time, but that's where I wanted to at least, we can now refer back to this as needed.
That's right.
Because at some point it's going to be, well, wait a minute, drop from 900,000 to nothing. What happened? And then you'll have to do the story again and then et cetera, et cetera. So yeah. In recognition to our form that we do have on the website, in terms of getting questions from the community to discuss here, somebody has observed the hotel being constructed on Upper Union, the chateau. The construction apparently has stopped. And there may be something, at least based upon the research so far, that, you know, between the property owner and the developer, they're just stopping. I'm sure you're aware of it, and the building inspector is doing whatever's appropriate to ensure that they've at least controlled and secured the site accordingly?
According to the building commissioner, they have done a great job securing the site. I know there's some concerns about safety over there. And best knowledge we have, which is is defined as an educated guess, is that they're about halfway. They've invested easily several $1 million in that site already.
Right.
And it would be strange to a lot of us if they just left it there. I don't think I need to say this to anybody, but just to confirm it, you know, obviously the hospitality industry is one of the ones that was shut down first and will come back last. I think there's likely a lot of uncertainty in that. At some point it becomes a money flow thing. You know, I think that because there's been so many assets already placed on that property, you're just, you know, folks are going to likely just have to wait this one out through how the economic cycle goes at the federal level, down to the state level, down to the local level.
Right.
I think if people say it's shut down forever, it's not going to get built, I think that's a rumor. I think that's an assumption. I think we have to chalk this one up on good old fashioned business, as we were just talking about.
Sure.
But really, I think it's nothing more than that. It's just simply we're halfway through. We spent several million. We have several more million to go, whatever the exact dollars are. But the building commissioner has been up there. The site does appear to be fairly secure. There's not too much more that can be done or too much more that can be done other than fencing that's really going to deter what every single person's concern might be.
Sure.
The police certainly take a spin by, probably not as much based on our staff and models we could do, but they do take a spin by. They have taken note of the deserted land. And likely, my guess is that we're going to have to wait this one out, you know, for a little while longer. So let's see what happens.
Yeah, and then that also brings up there was a private residence along Jordan Road that had been the subject of a fire, a rather disastrous fire a couple years ago.
Sure. And
that's less secure. Obviously, it's also well set back from the road. It is private property. I'm sure the building inspector has been doing whatever he can in that situation as well. But that's one of those tough areas where, you know, the town can only do so much. It is private property.
It is private property. I mean, I think I agree. I mean, if I drove by, you know, some of these properties every day, both of them, you know, and more, you obviously have a lot of concerns. Butter. Oftentimes, we're very limited with what we can do. My best advice to anyone listening, if you have questions about properties like this on Jordan Road, or the hotel, or any other property in town, we often frequently get calls from people who haven't maintained their yard for years.
Right.
You know, they own the property, they rented it out, they're not renting it anymore, and they let everything grow.
Sure.
You know, it could be a property of, you know, obviously a vanity issue for your neighborhood, or concern for kids to enter, or a desirable act to be happening and whatnot. But the best advice I can give is to always give the building commissioner's office, the inspectional services office, a call. There are a lot of techniques, statutes, laws that are very buried deep. That take a full lawyer to understand.
Yeah.
We have a tremendous building commissioner who's knowledgeable. We also have a tremendous town attorney who's knowledgeable about what those options are. I've seen him be very successful at addressing a lot of these issues, and or finding out for the abutter or the neighbor or the person on the street, you know, what the kind of best information is that we have on a property like that. You'd be people out there be really surprised at what he knows. And so just like I mentioned about the hotel a moment ago, you know, usually you get a lot of this insight, you get great intelligence, you get, you know, facts, and you might be able to get some action where the building commissioner, Gus Brown, or the assistant are able to inquire into these things. So, with the Jordan Roadhouse, it's and many times, just like a lot of these properties, Steve, they're private property. You can't just walk onto them. And oftentimes, they're being held up in court. There's insurance issues.
Yeah.
People haven't gotten the check yet. Nobody will insure them in the future. You know, everybody's got, you know, can get slowed down in this. Meanwhile, that family could have moved on to another state. I mean, there's a lot of dynamics and situations that happen.
Yeah. Clearly
the building commissioner by far in our town is the one that's going to know the most.
Yeah, there's always something more to the story, and it's probably not a rumor.
If you heard it on Facebook, it's a good chance it's not true.
Right. Yeah, as a general rule, I would agree with that. I mean, it's just the way it is.
I mean, sure. The amount of phone calls we get about Facebook comments is unbelievable. And in my experience, just a lot of the stuff is rumor.
At least one other item in terms of upcoming, the next senior center office hours with the town council and I believe Rep Roy, the next Thursday, the 20th also.
August 20th at 8:30, the Zoom link will be going out later today. It's their fourth installment now of remote.
Maybe the fourth, I think.
Office, yeah. It might be the fourth, remote office hours. We started this a couple years ago back up with counselors and myself. See the assistant and others go down, and Jeff Roy go down to the senior center to have a cup of coffee. We randomly showed up on the same day and didn't know it. Jeff Roy was having his office hours there, and we were having our first installment. And it was unbelievable because someone came to him about asking something about a road, and so he passed them over to me.
Right.
And then somebody asked me at a table while having a bagel about their Medicare problem. And I passed them over to him.
That's
and the light bulb, him and I, like the light bulb went off and said, this is perfect. What a service. So,
absolutely.
You've been to a few of them, Steve, I know. And,
yeah.
You know, you just tell everybody, bring a cup of coffee. We're trying to just continue to do things as normal, obviously.
Right.
So, that'll be a lot of fun.
That'll be a virtual. You can still bring the cup of coffee and have a conversation and get a question or two answered.
That's right. And I think a couple of the recent ones have just turned into kind of almost informational sessions about what's been going on Beacon Hill or at the local level on COVID. So, you know, I think it's been informative for those that come. And,
well, that covers, I think, the short list that we had. There has been a lot going on. There's more to come.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to touch on before we kind of wrap up?
I just want to make one last thing. We should have talked about it earlier, but I just wanted to, congratulate Councillor Earle. For those that may not have been listening to the meeting this week, Councillor Anna McCarthy Earle was successful in getting accepted to a extraordinarily great law school down in Virginia. And he announced his formal resignation from the town council on Wednesday. There will be a special municipal election on December 5th. Correct. There will be a one sheet info page going out today or on Monday for all citizens who are interested in that to see the various deadlines of nomination papers and when they're due. And I just want to note that, this was tricky to try to schedule to not interfere with the state required the elections for the primary and the general,
right,
as illustrated by Anne-Marie earlier. And, even that was a very short overview. There's a lot more details and mail-in and stuff. And the law is actually going to end up requiring us to do mail-in ballots, I believe.
Because it's still within the calendar year from when
Year. We've confirmed that we're not required to do early voting, but those are issues that we're going to have to debate. But the germane point is A, there will be a special municipal election in December on the 5th for a seat on the town council. And I'd obviously be remiss, and I said it the other night, but I just thank Councillor Earls and congratulate him. I frequently refer to his book in conversations with people in town about development and demographics. His book, It's Someday, The Puritan Precinct, The 21st Edge City, 21st Century Edge City, honestly may become a town classic if it isn't already. I think he wrote it at age 12. I hope I'm not mocking him.
He was certainly young when he wrote it.
As a geographer, it's certainly, eye-opening because we don't talk about edge cities much. I can't say enough about Eamon. I've worked with a lot of smart people in my life, a lot smarter than me, a lot more academically talented than me. He's an exceptionally bright young man, and it's just really, really wonderful to hear and see him take this big step to go to law school in Virginia. It's going to be great for his career, great for him. He's just got such a bright future. He's just an incredibly bright man. I just want to congratulate him and thank him and for his service to the town. And hopefully someday he'll be back in the community, as he said the other night, that there will be a special municipal election to fill a seat on the town council on December 5th. The information was presented the other night, but we'll have it up online today.
I think to the extent that the mail-in is going to be available, hopefully that will also actually increase participation. The last December special election, if I recall, only had 200-odd voters. So we should be able to set that as a goal to beat that.
This is on a Saturday.
True.
Which is a unique
thing opportunity for Frank. As well. Absolutely.
But, the issue is that, we had to make all these decisions now.
Right.
To fulfill the charter requirements and other things, even though the world is changing every hour, legally I don't have those choices, and the town clerk didn't have those choices and her tools to be able to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, we worked within the parameters, and I think in some ways for the community too, it is critical to kind of have some space out of these elections. It's going to get a lot of election fatigue.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of issues being flying around. It's going to be a debatable time. And so to have a little room in between these was also a critical factor. So, I wish Eamon the best. I believe he's going to be there for another meeting. His resignation doesn't take effect for a couple weeks. So,
All right. Well, thank you for your time today.
Anytime, Steve. A couple weeks.
Enjoy your weekend. We'll be back at to talk Franklin again.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.